Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com. You can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville on iTunes and Function Smart Physical Therapy with our buddy Gino Cinco. Our next guest has been to three Olympic Games. She won Ironman Cozumel, and she's the Olympic gold medalist from 2012, Nicola Spierig. Nicola, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. Hi, everyone.
Thanks so much for taking time, Nicola. So, Nicola, take me back. When did you get into triathlon? What were your sports before triathlon?
Well, I'm coming out of a sporty family, I would say. My grandfather already was a sports teacher. Both of my parents are sports teachers. So I grew up doing a lot of different sports. I could try out a lot of sports. And I did my first triathlon when I was 10 years old, I think.
10 years old?
Exactly, yes.
Wow.
Long time ago.
You know, it's interesting. I was looking at you were born on February
82.
February 7th, right?
Yes.
February 7th.
Yes.
The day before that was probably the most important moment in triathlon history. That was the day at Ironman with Julie Moss and Kathleen McCartney. That was the year that the day that, you know, she crawled across the line and everybody on TV watched that.
Okay.
And you were born the next day. You were meant to be a triathlete.
I didn't know that.
You were meant to be a triathlete.
Probably.
So what was it about the sport that you liked from the age of 10? Was it just the competition? And what was it that was different than other sports?
I definitely liked the three different disciplines. So I just love doing sports, and I tried out a lot of different sports. But triathlon never got boring because you could always train. Like, if it rained, you didn't have to go on a bike. You could swim or you could run. So I definitely loved the three disciplines in one sport.
And as you're having a lot of success. When did you start thinking about possibly going to the Olympic Games?
Well, it was actually my sister who said that she wanted to go to the Olympics really young. I was more just enjoying doing sports and training. And I think when triathlon got to the Olympic Games in Sydney, 2000,
uh-huh.
I knew the Swiss athletes who went there pretty well, and like I realized that they were not that much better than me. So I think that was the moment I thought, oh well, that's not like it's not impossible, and it would be a real dream to go there and to compete in the Olympics.
And so early on, your dad was your coach?
Exactly. Yes, my dad was coaching me for 15 years.
Wow.
Including my first Olympics. So he made me a really good athlete already, yeah.
So when you go to your first Olympics in 2004 in Athens, you get 19th, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And were you happy with that? And what was that first Olympic experience like?
Yeah, I was really happy. Like, my goal in Athens was really to qualify for the Olympics, to be a part of Olympic Games. And I was injured. I had a stress fracture about 3 months before the race.
Yeah.
So I was extremely happy that I qualified and just enjoyed the experience. And it was great for me.
So after Athens, did you start thinking, okay, I want to move up some places. And at that point, did you start looking for another coach, feeling like, okay, my dad and I worked together for this period of time, but now it's time to potentially go to another level?
Well, kind of. I was always studying.
That's right. You're going for your law degree.
Exactly. I was studying law, so first move after the Olympics was to go back to my studies and to study a bit harder. But it was the point where my father and I always knew that he was basically, as a coach, he was too kind, so he was not the coach who could push me to my limits. So we both knew if I really wanted to know where my limits are, I needed to change coaches. So it was not like something I was rushing to do.
Right.
But we kind of were looking and getting new inputs from different coaches before that already. And so in 2005, I think I met Brett. But my first reaction to his approach was like, I will never ever train with you because you're crazy. So that didn't work out from the start.
What was it? I mean, some of the workouts are crazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, back in 99, actually, when I won my first junior European championships, when I was like 16 or 17, a Swiss athlete who trained with him approached me and said I would never swim good enough to become a real good athlete if I didn't join Brett. So back then I had a look who this guy was and who trained with him, and I heard all these crazy stories about his training.
Right.
So I already made my mind up that he was not the right coach for me already back then. So when he was asking me, I was like, no way. Forget it. Bye.
So when did you change your mind, and what changed your mind?
Well, as I said, I walked away, and I think that was actually what Brett, like, he doesn't like that.
Right.
Having an athlete just say no to him.
That was good.
I think he was intrigued by me back then.
Yes.
But 1 year later, I was racing a Swiss race against his athletes, and I was leading, I was beating them, but he stood there and just said, "You make me cry." And I got so angry because I thought, like, what are you talking about? You athletes are, like, way back. So after the race, I went to him and said, what was that about? And we started talking again. But I was still not convinced to train with him.
Yeah.
And by that time, or a few weeks later, I got injured, and he invited me up to his training place in Les Arts back then.
Yes.
And asked me to just have a look. And I thought, well, now I'm injured anyway, so he can't do something wrong anymore. So I just went up and had a look. And that was the start of working together with him for more than 8 years now.
Yeah, and what he's famous for really understanding each of his athletes. It seems like every program he does is very individual to
exactly.
You.
Exactly. Yep.
So were there points during that 8 years where you questioned what he was doing? Because there was a point there where, like you said, it seemed like you had leg injuries and stress fractures. And there was a point where you got control of that. It seemed like you would run, you'd run one day on the roads, one day in the treadmill, and then take a day or take some time off. And then there was a point where you started doing more running and got injured again.
Well, first of all, I totally agree with you. Like, Brett is amazing how he knows the personalities of the athletes and how he adapts the training to the different personalities. So that is really amazing, and it's always interesting to me to see a new athlete come in and how he treats that athlete and how he puts the training together for each of the individuals. Like, it's really, really interesting. And to me, injuries just belong to being a professional athlete. Like, I try to see where my limits are.
Right.
And that also means that sometimes I step over and I get injured.
Right.
So that was, I never blamed Brett for that, because that's just, if I really want to know how fast I can get, that's just part of my job. And so that was the reason why we also, 2 years before the Olympics, tried to run more again and
right.
tried to run every day. And I got injured, so that was the way to know, okay, that's not a possibility for me. Doesn't
yes.
work, exactly. And it was good to know, so we could find other ways.
Well, and also, you did it far enough away from the Olympics where it didn't hurt you.
Exactly.
And then you could swim more. That's a nice thing about triathlon. When you get injuries and potentially can't run or ride, you can swim or go to the gym and do other things.
Exactly. It actually gave me a lot of experience, new experiences, new inputs in the swim. So in the end, I think it helped me. But of course, by the time you're injured, it's really hard to handle it.
So with in Beijing, you get sixth place. And was that, like you said, in 2004, you were happy with your 19th. You're making great progress. Now you're sixth place. Were you happy after those games?
I was. I thought I did a really good race. I knew that if everything would have been perfect for me, there would have been a possibility for a medal. So that was what I was aiming. But the race didn't went as it should have gone to be perfect for me. So sixth place was a good result.
Right.
Yeah, I was happy.
And then I remember reading, I think it was on Slow Twitch, from Tim Carlson, where he said that right after the Olympics in 2008, Brett was already planning on, okay, if we're going to win a gold in 2012, Emma Snowsill is the person, and we've got to run better. We've got to run better that last 300 meters and have to take it out hard the first 3,000 of the race. So did you guys really start planning for 2012 right after the Olympics in 2008? That's pretty cool.
He definitely did.
Yes.
So he, like one day after the Olympics in Beijing, he was like, okay, we start training now. And I was like, no, I'm at the Olympics. I want to enjoy a few days of having a rest.
And yes.
Just, you know.
Exactly.
And he was like, no, that's the time when no one else is training. And so I still call him crazy coach, because sometimes he's extremely serious about his plans and about getting his athletes where the best they can be. So he was definitely planning, and after a few days I started to plan as well.
right. Well, it's nice.
It was just, to me the first step was again going back to university and finish my studies. And first we had a bit of an argument about that, because His thoughts about that was that he went to the internet and looked up the numbers of students who finished their law studies each year in the world. So there were thousands and ten thousands of it, and sent me the number and said, well, that is the number and how many athletes become Olympic champion in triathlon? One. Right. So why do you want to go back to finish your studies, and you can study this when you're 50. So we had an argument about that, but in the end, I won.
Of course you did. Yeah, of course you did. I don't think you lose it much. And also, the culture is different than Australia. Australia,
definitely.
When people come out of high school, and they don't necessarily feel like they have to go to college if they're an athlete. In Switzerland,
exactly.
Having an education and having a profession is more important than being a professional athlete, I'm guessing.
Exactly. Yeah, having an education was extremely important to me as a Swiss, and coming out of a family with teachers. So
yes.
It was just very important. And in the end, Brett understood that it helped my sports performance as well. Like, I had to finish my studies, and I had to have a good education to afterwards concentrate on the sports and have my mind free and have the security of a good education. So this was extremely important, and it definitely helped me becoming Olympic champion in the end.
So between 2008 and 2012, you went and got your law degree. And the nice thing is, since you'd been dealing with injuries, you knew how fragile a career it is as an athlete, right? Your career as an athlete can be over fairly quickly. Having a law degree meant that you had something that could last forever.
Exactly, yes. And like in Switzerland, becoming Olympic champion is probably special, but otherwise, as a triathlete, you know that you will go back to work after your career.
Right.
So you know exactly that once being an athlete is finished, and it was really important to me to know what I do after that, if that's because of an injury early or if that's because I would just get too old to perform well. I knew I would work something else afterwards, so yeah, to me that was crucial.
So you worked with Brett for 2 years leading into 2008, and then mm-hmm. You came back to racing full time after the 2008 Olympics in 2010, and in that year in the grand final, Emma Snowsill ran 33.08 off the bike, and you guys ran about 35. So obviously she's still the target. From that grand final in 2010, what was the plan for 2011, 2012 to make up that difference between Emma and you guys?
That's probably the interesting part as well, or one of the interesting parts of Brett, because he didn't have one plan. He had a lot of plans, and he made sure that I could go to the Olympics, and back then we were still counting on Emma being there,
right,
and that I would have to beat her. So I had several tactics that I could use depending on how the race went. And I think that made me extremely self-confident.
Right, because your running got better. And you...
Yeah, my running got better, my swimming got better, but I also had the bike legs would probably break away if I had to, and I really had different possibilities. So that was good to know.
Exactly. And I was reading somewhere that most of your communication with Brett is more text and email than face to face conversation. And everybody communicates differently. Do you find that works best for you guys?
Yeah, it got better over the years. So first, when we started, my English wasn't that good.
Yes.
So it was hard for me to communicate. And after a hard session, I think I am emotional. I'm sometimes angry because I didn't agree that that was the best session probably, or just because it didn't go as I wanted to or something else. So I prefer to have a moment to sit down, to reflect myself how the training went, and then give Brett as a coach a good feedback instead of getting out of the water and just let my emotion influence my feedback.
Sure.
So this is one reason, and so it just started like that, and as I said, it got a bit better, but I still like to write my thoughts down instead of talking about it right after the session.
Well, it allows you to think about it. It allows you to plan
exactly.
it out. Yeah, and really,
and I'm someone,
and take the emotion
out
of
someone,
it.
Yeah, and I'm someone who thinks a lot, and I'm also someone. Brett has to explain the session so that I see the sense of it, because otherwise, if I don't see a sense in it, it doesn't work for me. So we did have to communicate a lot, and that was just the way that worked best for both of us.
So, a year and a half out from the games in February 2011, you're dealing with injury, and you're swimming a ton because you can't run. Did you, mm-hmm. because you were only a little over a year out from the games, were you worried that, gosh, am I going to get there? The Olympics aren't that far away, and you can't run.
Actually, not that much. I think we were both surprised how well I was handling it, because the injuries before, I think injuries are always difficult for athletes because you can't work on your goals as you want to, and you have to slow down and do it differently. So, but at that time I was quite calm, and I actually, in the end, I enjoyed to have so much time for my swimming and to try to improve there. So, and I had been to two Olympics, so for me it wasn't about going there. I really had the goal to win a medal, and I thought, well, either it works out that way and I try my best, or it doesn't work out. And then I have been to the Olympics, so I didn't really worry about going there.
Right. So in 2011, they do the test race on the course in London, and you get your spot on the Swiss team by getting eighth, which is awesome. So now you know you're on the team. That has to give you confidence. And when did you realize that you're also dealing with asthma? Because that's a big problem.
I always had some little problems, like even for Beijing, because of the
the humidity there and the hot air.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a bit of a problem, but not as bad. Like, it got worse. I had really bad. If I got a cough from a cold, it wouldn't go away for months. So it was a bit a mix of asthma and coughing. And yeah, I think back then I was so motivated, and I just was excited to have the have gotten over the injury. So I really wanted to train hard, and of course the cough needed some time to go away as well, and the asthma. So that was a time where I was glad to have Brett as well, who could judge from the outside and advise me.
So in 2012, you win a big race in Madrid, and the day before the race, you swim and ride the whole course, which isn't something people normally do, but you win, and you beat Lisa Norden in Kitzbühel, and then 2 weeks before the Olympics, and I'm sure people went crazy, 2 weeks before the Olympics, you're going and doing a 70.3 race.
Yeah.
Now, was that your idea, Brett's idea? When he first said, you're going to go do a 70.3, did you think he was totally crazy?
No, not totally.
I
called him crazy coach before I was used. By that time, I was a bit used to his unusual ideas about preparation.
Yes.
Like you said I qualified with an eighth place in London for the Olympics, but I actually had to, like, just to have a decent result in 2012 as well.
Yes.
So I wanted to do that in Mooloolaba in the first race, the first World Cup I did, and he made me do like 32 200s on the track in the morning of the race. So I was I have to qualify for the Olympics. I was training, and I was So I was used to his ideas.
You did 32 200s on the morning of a race.
Yeah, 32 200s.
Oh, 32 200s.
I was riding there. I did the 32 200s. I was riding back, and then I had the race.
Oh my God! How far did you ride each way?
I don't know. It wasn't that much. It was about 10K or something. But still not what you are used to do before an important race.
Like. Right.
I'm doing a half Ironman before the Olympics. He actually explained me why. He explained me the sense of it.
Yes.
And at that stage, I felt incredibly fit. I felt incredibly confident. Everything was going well. And I had done similar things before. Like, I had done a half Ironman before short distance races, and it went really well. So I had the confidence to say, yes, let's do that and not be worried about it.
What I like about it, it really does make sense. Rather than doing a high-intensity sprint race or something like that that can hurt you anaerobically, it's almost like a training day for someone like yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
exactly.
You,
No one does it. But if you think about it,
it makes sense.
If you have someone explaining it to you, it makes sense. Exactly.
Yes. That is wild. Okay. So then the Olympics themselves. So you're Emma Snowsill's not racing, which is amazing to me.
Me too.
I know, right? You know what's so funny? If you look at the Australians over the years, in Athens, McKeely Jones had won the test race on the course the year before, and they didn't put her on the team for 2004. They've got sort of a history of doing things like that.
Yeah.
Over there.
Oh, and Emma Snows here as well. She should have been on the team in Athens as well.
Oh, yes. They both should have been on, no question.
Exactly, yeah.
So a couple days before the race, and knowing that Emma wasn't going to be there, how did that change the way you approached the race? Or did it?
I think it did, yeah. I was almost a bit disappointed.
Sure. You want to beat the Olympic champion.
Exactly. And I basically trained for several years to beat her at the Olympics. So it was on one hand, it was a relief, of course. But on the other hand, I was almost a bit disappointed. And it changed. I think it put some of the tactics in forward and some others we had back. It didn't change dramatically, but like I knew I didn't really have to attack on the bike and ride away now because I can run as well as the others over there.
Yes. And you started to feel sick a couple days before the games.
Yeah, I just I had some unusual problems, some cramps in the calves and itch in the stomach, which is not normal to me. But nothing like I couldn't say I was sick. It was just unusual.
Right. Yeah, it could be part nerves or something like that too.
Yeah.
So on race day, pretty much you have a group coming off of the bike with Helen Jenkins and yourself and Aaron Demsom and Andrea Hewitt and Lisa Norden. So as you're looking around with those folks, who were you concerned about?
I was concerned about me because I felt some twitching in my quads. And
yes.
The starting of some cramps. So I knew I could, on a good day, I could beat all of those athletes.
Right.
I could outsprint them. I could run with them. But I was just, I didn't have a great day. I had some problems. And that as well. Actually, Brett and me trained to win a medal not on a good day, but on an average day. So I was prepared for that. I was prepared to have problems. But still, I had to think how I deal with them and how I still made it work. So we got off the bike, and I was more concerned about how to play it, if I keep to my first tactics or if I change and stuff like that, than to worry about the other athletes.
So, about 1,000 meters to go, bell lap, Aaron Demsham started to get away a little bit. And there was, I remember Brett, in the article I read, Brett was watching from some casino, I think. And he saw you make a move in Hyde Park up a little hill. And he was like, oh my God, what is she doing? Because he doesn't know what's going on with you. You made that move mainly because you want to get away a little bit because you're cramping.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, we both knew that my strength was the short sprint. I could out-sprint everyone, of the athletes who were there. So that would have been the normal way to race, to just wait and sit and then out-sprint them.
Yes.
So because the cramp started to get worse and with every acceleration, the risk that I got a real cramp and actually had to stop got higher. I decided that the risk was too high to have such a big change of speed. So I changed tactics and I decided I would, instead of a short, sharp sprint, I would do a build-up run.
Yes.
And that was my strength, and I knew it, and Brett knew it. He was actually in a betting shop, betting on athletes, and not just me, but Lisa Norden and Aaron Denshin.
So. Did you give him abuse about that he bet on other athletes? Yes.
Of course.
He should have all his money on you. That's ridiculous.
It's actually amazing that he could foresee the whole podium, and I have a picture of his betting papers. So he did bet on all three.
Oh, is that right? He just
won a medal.
So he didn't bet on anybody else, just the three.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. So that's pretty impressive.
That is really impressive. So it comes down to a kick, and it's you and Lisa Norden, and it's probably the fact that it's the Olympic gold on the line, having a sprint finish at the Olympics, people don't think that's going to happen. It doesn't happen very often. As you're coming down the line and the crowd is going crazy and you've got the big TV screen, what was going through your head?
Well, we were counting on it. We were quite sure when Emma wasn't there that there would be a sprint finish. So I was...
You were planning
on it. I had been... that was one of the possibilities, and we were planning on winning it if it would come down to one. So I have been training for that over a long period of time, always in a short run session. There was always a sprint afterwards with the boys. So
yes,
I was pretty used to that.
Yes.
But of course, as I said, it wasn't my strength to do a longer build-up run. It was the short sprints I was good at. So I just went for it, and actually it was the big TV screen I was watching, because they showed the, of course, they showed the race live.
Right.
So I saw on the screen that Lisa came closer again in the end. And so I was completely aware of her getting close again. And I knew I had to find something to get to the finish line first. I think in the end, I ran more with my head, because there was nothing left in the legs.
Wow. Well, and did you know that you had won? Because on TV, they couldn't tell, right? They had to wait for the officials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think as an athlete, you always have a feeling about it.
Yeah.
You see the bike races, and you always see one that holds the hands up.
Sure.
And even if it's really, really close. So I thought I had won, but of course, at the Olympic Games, you don't rely on your feelings.
No.
So the first thing I did was asking Lisa what she thought. And she said, well, I think you won, but I'm really happy about second, and started to cheer. And I thought about that, and I was like, well, but it's such a big difference between gold and silver. I just had to know before I could be happy about either. So, and the moments, the minutes that they took to actually look at the finish picture and decide who won, they were extremely long.
I bet. Forever. So when you find out you won, and then you're on the podium with the anthem playing, I'm sure that had to be pretty special.
That's an amazing moment. Like, it's, I can't describe it really, but there was like a lot of emotions, and I'm still getting goosebumps if I think about it.
Yes.
I was extremely relieved that it was over. I was extremely proud that I actually reached my goal, my dream, and extremely thankful for all the people in my team who made it possible. So it was, I think it was the moment I started to realize that I was Olympic champion, and the moment that is really, really emotional.
Well, and then weren't you named the Swiss Athlete of the Year?
Mm. Yep.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool, exactly, especially because we have like one woman and one man getting nominated, and the man was Roger Federer.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was very nice. I think a perfect end of the year like that.
So a lot of times when people win a gold medal, that next couple of years, it's, you know, cashing in a little bit, going and racing as much as possible, getting appearance fees, that type of thing. And that doesn't sound like you, though. You went and had a baby.
Well, I went and had a baby.
You went and had a baby. Actually, yes. Yes, you had a little baby Giannis.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, that was probably even more emotional. So I had a fantastic 2013 as well.
Yes.
For me, like, I was together with my partner, with Rito Hawk, who was always also a professional athlete.
Yes.
Since a long time. And we always wanted to have a family. But to me, it was clear that I wanted to focus on the Olympics in London without a family, because I knew once we would have a baby, the priorities would change, and our baby would be in first place. So I wanted to focus on the Olympics, but we had discussed before London, whatever happened, that we would like to have a family afterwards, and that's what we did, and I think it was a great decision.
And so you become a mom, and actually it's funny, today is Mother's Day. I don't know if that's around the world, but it's Mother's Day here in the U.S. How did it change you and the way you look at the sport? being a mom?
Well, it changed a lot. As I said, I think having a family changes priorities.
Yep.
So family always comes first after, and sports is not in first place anymore. But to me, it's still my passion. I still love to do triathlon. I still love to train and race and do sports. So it changed in a way that my everyday life looks different. Now it's Yannis that comes first.
Yes.
It needs a lot of organization. I need to be more flexible. Sometimes I have to change my training, or I have to change my racing plans. I'm not racing the World Series mainly because it's too much traveling and I want to spend more time with my son and not traveling the world.
Right.
So it changes a lot, but I think it has a lot of advantages for me as well, because I took triathlon extremely serious before, and now after a bad session, when before I was thinking about how it was, why it was that bad, and how I could have changed it and stuff. I just come home and I see Yannis smile, and it's gone. It's not important anymore. So I think it helps me being more flexible.
Yes.
And more at ease with just easier, and I don't think too much.
You look at you've got a more important priority.
It puts everything in perspective and makes you realize that running and swimming and cycling is not the most important thing in life.
What I love is this last year in 14, you were second at the Swiss Cross Country Championships, a runner, ran what, a 2:37 12 in Zurich, 24th in the marathon. So you're one of those people who does what she wants to do. And then this year you went out, in the end of last year, you went and won Ironman Cozumel, which I'm sure a lot of people were like, wait, what? Nicola is doing a full Ironman? Is that something you've always wanted to do?
I trained a lot with long-distance athletes. So it was always one of our jokes that I said, short-distance athletes are much harder, they have to go much faster, more intense. And of course they said, oh no, long-distance is much harder because you have to go over 9 hours.
And right.
So that was always one of our, friendly
joking around with each other. Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And so I always wondered, I always thought I should do one just to know what I'm talking about. And the decision to do Ironman Cozumel was really short. I think I had 6 or 7 weeks after the World Cup in Colombia to prepare for the Ironman. So that's when we said, okay, let's do it. And I was like, okay. And so it was was quite...
It's a long day.
It was just... Exactly. it was fun. I extremely enjoyed it. I love to have new challenges, and I think 2:14 was all about that.
Exactly.
So I did my first two marathons, I did my first Ironman, but I also did 5K races, so I actually had races from 15 minutes to over 9 hours.
Yes.
And I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it.
So now you're a little over a year from the Olympics. I'm assuming that the 2016 is the goal, to go back to the Olympics?
One of the goals, yes.
Ah, now is another one of the goals possibly to go to Kona and do the Ironman there?
Well, it's definitely this year we have the European Championships in Switzerland.
Yes.
So it's always really nice to have a home race. And European Championships are important to me because I've won it 4 times.
Yes.
And Europeans were the race that I think I had a breakthrough.
Exactly.
Starting to work with Brett. So they're important. So this is the goal for this year, to do really well there. And, of course, it would be nice to go to my 4th Olympics and try to do... as good as I can there, but I think my way there will be different to the other short-distance athletes. I just enjoy having different things in my life, but also in my sports career, and I enjoy 214, as I said, so I think I will try to qualify. I will try to qualify as soon as possible, and then I can imagine to do another marathon or to do, I don't know, maybe even an Ironman going into 216. So it should be a fun way for me, and I want to enjoy it.
So during the time that you've been training with Brett, did you train much with Chrissy Wellington during that era?
Yes. Well, I was training with Brett the whole time. She was training with him. Like I met her in the first camp. She was doing with Brett, and
right.
I saw her whole career with him. Her whole first two or three years, she was with him. So that was really interesting. Yeah.
Did it surprise you how quickly she went from, you know, when she first came there, I think she was trying to be an Olympic athlete. And then
Yes. Next
thing you know, she's winning Ironman Korea and then, you know, winning the Ironman. Did it surprise you that she had that type of success?
Yes and no. I mean, I was training with her, so I saw how strong she was.
Yeah.
And especially on the bike, she was just amazing. I haven't seen an athlete like that before or after, and I have seen a lot training with Brett. So
right.
she was amazing, and so, like, of course, I couldn't have said that she would win Hawaii so many times, but you could clearly see that she was an exception, that she was an exceptional athlete, yeah.
Love that. And after you won the gold, what was Brett's response? Did he send you a text? Did he call you?
Well, as he already said, he was watching the race
Yeah. In
the betting shop in London. He was in London because I was asking him to be there.
Yes.
It's mainly for the preparation. We knew he couldn't. He didn't have an accreditation, so he couldn't get on the course.
Right.
But I just wanted to have him there for the few days before the race. And then after the race, he came up to me, and I think we both smiled, and he said, well, that sprint was just really bad. That was his first.
You mean when you made the move in Hyde Park? When you made
yeah,
he was like, what were you thinking? Nice. You just won a gold medal.
Exactly, yeah. So I just won a gold medal. His first thing was like, your sprint was awful. And I think the second thing was like, okay, we have to work on your swim. Now that's done. Tomorrow morning at 8, we swim. So, but I knew, I mean, he was incredibly proud. And he was really, really happy for me. And you could see it. But it was just, I think it was just our way, so
right. It
was just funny.
Now, you didn't swim the next morning.
Oh, I did, of course.
Did you really?
Yes.
That is wild.
I actually did swim at 8 a.m. after the Olympics, but to be honest, that was the first 45 minutes after the race I had to myself. And
oh, I bet.
No one could ask me something, and no one could... that was just the first 45 minutes, and I went there because of that, not because of the swimming.
right, just to have a little time to yourself. And what was the reaction
Exactly. Back
home in Switzerland when you win the gold medal?
It was huge. Like, for Switzerland, like, in Olympic Games, Summer Olympic Games, we only have four women ever winning a gold medal, and the first was like 1900.
Wow.
So it is extremely special for Switzerland. And that said, of course, all my friends, my family, my whole village, everyone was coming together and having a big welcome, and it was big.
Love that. Nicola, thank you so much for taking so much time. I love the relationship with you and Brett. I think that's really fun. That he certainly seems to understand you now.
Yes. Well, we always said we have On a lot of points, we have completely different point of view.
Yes.
But I think we have three things in common. Like, we have a lot of respect for each other.
Uh-huh.
I think he is the best coach of the world, clearly, because otherwise I wouldn't train with him. I've seen him doing amazing things, not just with me, but with a lot of athletes. We have the same goal, normally. We had the same goal, making me Olympic champion. And we both know we're giving absolutely 100% to achieve it. And those three things, I think, always make us sit back together and find a way to go there together.
Right.
And that
right.
means we both have to make compromises. And he definitely made me a better athlete, but he's saying I also made him a better coach because he did have to change what he was normally doing and did have to do it a bit different. I think I'm a challenge for him, and I think it's good for him.
It is good for him. And he's got actually an athlete I've been working with for years. This mm-hmm. And you might have met him at Cozumel, Lucas Verzbikas.
Exactly, yeah, I met him.
Very,
really, really exciting that he's coming to Switzerland now.
Yes, yeah, he's a very nice young man who obviously has gone through some injury stuff. So
yeah,
I felt,
exactly.
actually, after reading a lot of the things with you and him, I felt that Brett would be the very best for Lucas because he understands people who are dealing with injuries.
He definitely does, yeah. I always thought he would... Well, when I heard the stories about him, I thought he would break people, but he's very good with injuries, and
yes.
he has ways different to other coaches and
yep.
doctors and physios, but especially if someone has been injured for such a long time, like Lucas,
yes.
I think it could be really, really good and a new approach.
Absolutely. Nicola, thank you so much for taking time. It was really fun to get to know you over the phone.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Nicola Spierig has been our guest, Olympic gold medalist. We are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, Babbittville on iTunes. Check us out and go over to Function Smart and check out our buddy Gino Cinco. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.